I am here with Steve Dillon, who has been a candidate for a long time, a local lawyer here in Indianapolis, and has what positions have you served with Normal?
I went to my first Normal meeting in 1973 with two Indianapolis lawyers and was impressed with the idea of legalizing marijuana as a way to get our freedom and liberty and justice with the criminal justice system. So I came back, and in the summer of 1974, I actually started Indiana Normal, the Indiana chapter of Normal, in the law office I was working in with for David Allison. And so that was the first thing I did, is become a member of Normal and help set up Indiana Normal. Since that time, I've been elected to the National Board of Directors for, I can't tell you if it's 30 years or 20 years, but I've been chairman of the board nationally for 12 years and then vice chair for about 4 years. And I'm back now serving as chairman of the board of the country again for Normal. I was the state director of Indiana Normal, the one I set up in 74, for most of that time, most of the time between 1977 until about 97 or so. So about 20, 25 years, I was the director of Indiana Normal. We filed a lawsuit in 1978 for medical marijuana, and it got some traction then because there were 13 states between 73 and 78 to decriminalize marijuana, and the medical marijuana state started. Of course, Governor Bowen said he wouldn't have anything to do with it since he was a doctor and we didn't need that drug in Indiana, so that didn't go very far then. But, you know, things are coming around now, and my work with Normal is another whole focus from what it was when we started in the early 70s. In 70, when Keith Stropp started National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, he started it with $5,000 he got from Hugh Hefner of Playboy magazine. Most people don't know that. And then he was working with Nader and farm workers' organizations. He's always been a guy trying to protect people who are whose rights are affected. So when Keith started, it was only like 10 or 11% of the people in the country were in favor of legalizing marijuana. We just had a poll out. I think it was March 27th. The University of Chicago AP poll came out. It's a reliable poll. And we're up to 61% in the United States now for legalizing marijuana. So it's gone up 50% from 11% to 51%. So now it's clearly in the interest of politicians of whatever party to talk about decriminalizing or legalizing marijuana, either for recreational purposes or for medical purposes in addition to hemp, because that's what the public want. And they don't have to be afraid anymore for bringing up the issue of legalizing marijuana when 60-some percent of the people in their district would vote for it. Now, there's been some state polls that Indiana has conducted in the last few years, and we found between 53 to 58% of people in Indiana in favor of taxing and regulating marijuana, like alcohol, as high as 78% a few years ago in a Ball State Channel 8 poll. 78% of the people wanted to tax and regulate marijuana like alcohol. Now, as a libertarian, I think that we should be able to grow marijuana in our backyard without government interference whatsoever, and we would have the right to act responsibly with that plant like all the other plants in our garden. And if we do something that would affect the safety of others, like drive under the influence or get children involved with something that's psychoactive like marijuana, then that would be a concern of the state. But other than that, I don't think the government should be involved with marijuana. Now, that's the difference that the libertarians have with perhaps some of these other parties. But everybody should be involved. This election cycle, Republicans, Democrats, independents, I don't care, socialists, libertarians, everybody should be talking about, and many of them are, by the way, talking about legalizing and decriminalizing marijuana. So that's one of the focuses I've had my career here as a criminal defense lawyer for 41 years in Indiana and in my work with Normal for 40-some years.
It really is fascinating. When I became executive director in 2008 in that election cycle, you weren't supposed to talk about pot legalization. You weren't supposed to talk about hemp. You weren't supposed to talk about marijuana. It was still kind of a major, I don't know if it was like a conservative messaging at that time in politics, but then somewhere around 2010, it started to shift, and I'm not sure what that shift was, but by 2012, you know, our gubernatorial candidate, Rupert, it was almost mandatory to talk about, and now in 2016, forget it, because we've seen things like Colorado and other states legalize. What do you think, was it a rapid shift? What do you think that shift was that changed the attitudes in politics from one of, don't talk about this, this is still where it's always been, war on drugs, to now, listen, this is smart government by legalizing marijuana?
One of the changes during that time period was President Obama. He publicly talked about his marijuana use, cocaine use, chomp gang or whatever, and that did something to loosen up the discussion of it. His allowing the now 24, with the new state of Pennsylvania last week, 24 medical marijuana states to operate even though it's in violation of federal law because marijuana is classified under Schedule I of the Controlled Substance Act, but he still pulled the federal government back from enforcing federal law in those medical marijuana states, and he's also kept them from enforcing federal law in the four legal recreational marijuana states plus D.C. So that was huge for the discussion, the fact that you're not getting arrested, and he's allowing the states to decide what's best for their own citizens. It sounds more like the old Republican philosophy than the Democratic philosophy of letting the states decide, but even the Republicans that are in favor of it think it should be left to the states to decide this issue, not the federal government. So I think the shift came during Obama. That part of it is just the fact that more and more people have become educated about the truth about cannabis and about its many uses as a medicine that has been developed even in the last 5 or 10 years. Paul Armentano from National Normal is one of the leading experts in the country on the medical uses of marijuana, and he just came out with an updated book on the emerging clinicals for marijuana, and they've added all kinds of new diseases and things that have been scientifically validated as a credible and reliable medicine for those diseases. To continue to have top scientific evidence and research supporting marijuana as a medicine only helps these arguments in these various states' legislatures and an initiative process to get these things changed.
I heard Hillary Clinton in a town hall essentially say, we don't know what it does because it's illegal. We need to reduce it from a Schedule 1 to a Schedule 2. So then it could then be used in research facilities across the nation at colleges. So we could discover all the benefits of marijuana. Do you agree with that philosophy?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. You know, in 1988, Judge Francis Young, which is a DEA administrative drug, ruled on a 20-year lawsuit that Normal filed in 1978. Maybe it was 73. It may have been longer period of time. And they finally ruled that marijuana is the federal judge ruled in that lawsuit in 1988 that marijuana is the safest, most effective therapeutic substance known to man. If it was scheduled at all, it ought to be a Schedule 5 after everything else. Certainly not a Schedule 2 with cocaine, because there's no comparison between cocaine and marijuana and Schedule 2. So no, I don't agree with that at all. What I agree with is the Pending Careers Act, and it's the first Senate bill in U.S. history to allow for Compassion Access Research Expansion Respect States Act. That's what the Careers Act stands for. It's been sponsored by Republicans, Democrats. Rand Paul was one of the first, the Libertarian Republican from Kentucky. And what this law should do, if it is passed, would allow for, no, again, make it a law that there's no prosecution in the medical marijuana states by the federal government. Number two is to reschedule it, but we don't want Schedule 2, and I think we ought to, I don't know if we can improve that to deschedule it. It shouldn't be on it at all because it's cigarettes aren't on it, and it's less dangerous than cigarettes. And alcohol isn't on it, so way less dangerous than alcohol, for example. How about less dangerous than aspirin that's not scheduled either? So it shouldn't be scheduled at all, but certainly it should be down to level 6 if it's on the schedule at all, and you should remove CBDs completely. Part of this act said that banking should be approved for all the medical marijuana states so that they can't say there's more violence of armed robberies at dispensaries as a result of the medical marijuana laws because they have to use cash. So that certainly we should approve banking. It's to approve treatment in VA hospitals for veterans with medical marijuana in the states where it's legal. And the last one is what you're talking about, removing barriers to research, because since the early 70s, they've been growing marijuana at the University of Mississippi. It's not very good marijuana, and they've given it to 8 or 13 different patients, individualized need patients under the Clinton administration. There's still a couple alive. But that's lousy dope. They have to smoke 10 big bombers a day just to help their conditions. And it's all controlled by the University of Mississippi because that's the only place in the country where you could legally research marijuana.
Why is that?
Because the government wanted to control and squelch it. This all started with Nixon. It started in 37 to prohibit something because alcohol prohibition didn't work, so we'll get the minority people in the South and whatever, and nobody will care. We can keep the federal government regulation force in effect to control people in 37. That when Nixon came in 68 and declared the war on drugs, he was going after the hippies and the people of minority faiths and just using marijuana as an excuse to control people. And it's been that way ever since. And they've used the hysteria of the 30s, the Three for Madness, and all these fictions over these years, which are being knocked out. And that's why in the last 10 years, really, there's been so much progress, because people are disputing the, you know, you smoke pot and grow breasts, and you're sterile, and you can't have children, and you can't go to school, and those kinds of things.
Yeah, well, I think the internet age has really helped accelerate it, too, because we're not just listening to these modes of propaganda. One of the best documentaries I've ever seen is called The House I Live In, which was done by the Jarecki brothers. It's on Netflix, and it basically walks you through the war on drugs and its effects and how the economy has been destroyed, and so now we've built a system where the bottom 15% of our population on the socioeconomic ladder has no means of economic chance, and so they turn to drugs, and then we warehouse them. Basically, just get rid of the poor people that we don't like. And it starts with marijuana. Rupert is talked about this all the time and still does, and what he has done as a profession, as a charity, is take kids who are 15, 16, 18, whatever, out of the juvie system. They've been arrested for pot. They go back in. They learn how to be a better criminal. They get out. They can't pay the fees that are associated with the court costs and the ankle bracelet of $150 a week. And they start committing more and more crime. And so the war on drugs has actually created more crime, and it all was started because of Nixon and political means, which Ehrlichman... It just came out recently that Ehrlichman admitted it, who was Haldeman and Ehrlichman his main advisors.
Yeah, wasn't that interesting, that article? Kind of shows where they were coming from in this war on drugs. It's been racist and control thing since the beginning, and you can see what Nixon was doing with it. When Reagan got in there, it got no better. You know, during that period of the Reagan years and the Bush years and the Nixon years, you know, this war on drug went way out of hand. And now we're working desperately as a country to undo the damage from those mandatory minimums and over-incarceration. It's the new Jim Crow. It's not just poor people, although there's a higher percentage of African Americans that are in that category. And it's the new Jim Crow. Michelle Alexander wrote a great book. She's a professor at Ohio State University. Came out of 2-3 years ago. And it talks about the fact of a mass incarceration on the drug war in the United States. I mean, we have 5% of the world's population, but we have 25% of the world's prisoners. And we're the land of the free and the home of the brave. So what's that about?
So what, in terms of Colorado and some of these other states where it is legal, and I have a friend whose son was having a lot of trouble here, getting involved in harder drugs in Indiana, and then he moved out to Calaveras County in California, which is, I guess, the easiest county to grow marijuana in the United States. And he barely smokes pot anymore. He doesn't do any other drugs because he has a successful pot farm. He's gone from a criminal drug addict to a successful entrepreneur in a matter of a year because of legalization. That's anecdotal. Do we have any facts and figures on what is happening in Colorado and some of these other states where it's recreational use or medical marijuana use and things have been eased?
Well, I don't know what you mean. The impact, some people talk about the fact that there have been an increase in hospital admissions in Colorado because people are eating these candy bars with 50 doses at once and they get pretty much of an overdose of that drug. Well, it doesn't kill you like alcohol or aspirin or whatever, but can put you in the emergency room. Often there's more admissions to hospital rooms that they've talked about in Colorado because if you get arrested for anything but you test positive for pot too, they throw in pot, even though it had no connection to why you went to the hospital. Maybe it was the prescription medicine, but you also use marijuana and it comes up in the screen, so they list that as one of the causes you went to the hospital. So there's a erroneous information out there that marijuana use causes people to go to the hospital, but that's not true. The other effects, they've talked about how there's an increase in drunk driving, but actually the new statistics I've seen from Colorado show a decrease in operation of drunk driving. There's been it has not encouraged younger people to use. The only violence associated with recreational marijuana in Colorado is, again, that the banks, they have to have armored trucks driving around because they can't use credit cards and checks and regular banking for these very successful businesses. I think that as time goes on, we'll have more and more data about how Washington and Oregon Colorado have dealt with legalization of recreational marijuana. Of course, you don't hear anything about problems in Alaska. They had the right of privacy since 1975 to have a whole bunch of marijuana in their house, and you never heard of problems up there.
I guess my question is, one of the things that I was at dinner with the in-laws the other day, the girlfriend's parents, but they were arguing, if we legalize marijuana, then crime's going to spike, and there's going to be more drug use of harder drugs, the gateway argument. What would you say to both of those arguments?
Consistently has been shown clear back since 1973 when California first decriminalized marijuana. They said there's going to be a great increase in marijuana. So they had all kinds of people research California back in the 70s, and they found, gee whiz, there's hardly any increase at all, even though it's decriminalized. And that's been the same for 30 or 40 years. They haven't ever had a correlation between more people smoke it because it's legal. People smoke it now, whether it's legal or not. We have 100 million marijuana smokers in this country. One out of every three adults has tried marijuana, whether it's legal or not. So that's really not an argument, and there's been no scientific proof that if you reform the law, you have a massive increase in use. I'm trying to think what your other question was.
About the escalation to harder drugs.
Oh, that's a great question because that does come up regularly. I had a debate at Vincennes University on legalizing marijuana, sponsored by the university last September, which is quite interesting. They filled Red Skelton Auditorium. And that was one of the arguments of the sheriff of Knox County and the drug and all alcohol counselor opposed to the proposed legalization of marijuana. And I pointed out all the recent scientific evidence about since you've talked about in the last 6 to 10 years, which shows that marijuana is one of the best exit drugs from narcotic addiction we ever have, and it's being used out throughout the country to help people get off of narcotic drugs. Instead of a gateway drug, it's an exit drug. It's never been shown to lead to addiction of cocaine or narcotic drugs. As a matter of fact, the scientific evidence clear back from 15 years ago, perhaps, shows that one out of 105 marijuana smokers, one tries cocaine. I mean, there's no connection between that. People that are addicted to heroin or narcotic pills have a better correlation to mama's milk and Coca-Cola than they do to use of marijuana as a means of getting addicted to that drug. It's used right now just the opposite, to get people off of narcotic drugs, and it's used in alcohol treatment too.
So when there's always a destination and direction argument in any kind of libertarian circle about any kind of policy. Some would say, listen, we need to legalize it, tax it, regulate it. And then there are others who said, just make it all free. I mean, maybe not just your personal opinion, but what are some of the pros and cons of both ways?
Well, I don't think there's any initiative process or any legislation that's going to get through to totally totally leave it alone. There's too much chance of making that $100 million a year in sales tax like Colorado. They still want to control some people. There's still the issue of public safety on the highways. They still have arguments against young people shouldn't use any psychoactive substance. They shouldn't be smoking dope or using any kind of alcohol or cigarettes or anything that's psychoactive until you're about 21, I think. So I think that there's some reasonable government regulations with that even libertarians should agree with. I'm still thinking you should be able to grow a couple plants next to the tomatoes and not worry about a helicopter landing in your backyard. But, that's what I think.
Now, what does the future of the legalization movement look like in terms of other states? Do you think there will be decreasing regulations? We've seen rapid change over the last 8 years. Are we going to continue to see that rapid change, or do you think that it'll plateau at some point?
Well, it's going to be legal, I think, within 5 years. Now, Keith Stropp said that at a normal conference in 1973 I attended, and I expected it to be legal by 78, but he was a bit optimistic. I'm going to say 5 years from now that we're going to have this changed in this country on a federal level, and states will have the right to choose how they do it. And it's kind of like leaving it up to your own states on how you want marijuana legal, but the federal government's not going to put you in prison for it anymore, and they're not going to support raiding doctors and doing the things they've been doing. As for things changing, like I said, on the 18th of April, which is what, 10 days ago or so, no, less than that, just last week, Pennsylvania is the 24th state that has medical marijuana in this country. There's 38 states total, plus the District of Columbia, that have some reform on marijuana, other than the 16 decriminalized states. So if it's an amazing how much progress we've made. And what's coming, I expect this year they're considering Missouri. There's not only legislation, but an initiative that should be on the ballot in Missouri that has a good chance of passing this year. Vermont has a chance of having it changed this year. Michigan, re-legalize. The normal board just endorsed Michigan legalization effort for Michigan, which very likely will pass. California is huge. California could pass this year. And if it does, I think the game's over, really. 1/8 of the world economy is going to go with California. Arizona, Maine, Massachusetts is very likely this year. Nevada, Ohio might take it up again. We have a chance of another half a dozen states this year.
There are always corporate interests and special interests that lobby against freedom in any industry. When we're arguing for more freedom in terms of legalization, who's on the other side of you when you're in the courtroom arguing that this shouldn't be done?
Well, people that want to make all the money on it, keep it to themselves, don't want libertarian or open access bills. They want control. So that's what happened in Ohio, and it failed when they had a lot of people invest a lot of money to have a monopoly on the process, and the voters wouldn't go for that. They want to have a more they don't want it controlled by the government to a certain number of people. They want it more access. They want to be able to grow 12 plants in their backyard. They like in Colorado and in most of these states, you can actually produce a certain amount of your own plant in your own yard for your own use. Now, that's as libertarian as you can get. And that's what I'd like to see more of. But the people that are that are opposing a lot of this more liberal, open-minded bills are people that are just trying to make money and monopoly on it. And they're opposing it. And law enforcement are opposing it because a lot of them, not all of them, but law enforcement are opposing it because it's a lot easier and safer to go get a marijuana plot than a meth lab, even though that's our problem in Indiana. It's a lot safer to get a hippie than a guy who's crazed on meth or cocaine or heroin. It's a lot safer. You're not going to get stuck with a needle and get AIDS. You're not going to get shot because most of these marijuana people don't have guns. So cops like to bust people for marijuana. That's why 52% of all drug arrests in Indiana are for marijuana possession of a little bit instead of methamphetamine or narcotic drugs or heroin, which is the drug problem in Indiana. So law enforcement want to keep something easy to get that's safer for them. It's a lot easier to smell something and pull over people in the car than do some of the other stuff. They made it real easy for law enforcement. Drug testing groups certainly want to keep the drug testing business going, so they would oppose any of this, I'm sure. I don't know, those kind of people.
Shameless self-promotion time. Thank you for joining us. So, how can people get involved to make a difference if this is an issue that they're really passionate about, and should they be passionate about it? And if people want to get in touch with you, if you want them to, I mean, you know, not everybody wants to be gotten in touch with, or normal, anything you want to plug, if somebody out there listening is going, it's time, I'm ready to get involved, how should they do that?
You know, there's lots of ways to get involved. My primary way of getting involved was working with NORML, the National Organization for Reform of Marijuana Laws, and you can go on www.norml.org, and there's all kinds of information from the national organization. You can get on the Indiana NORML website, which is probably www.ininormal.org, and get some more specific information. You can certainly call my law office has people working regularly with NORML and actually has a headquarters of NORML at 317-923-9391. When I was marching with the group for 420 in the State House this week, they can support Karen Tallien, who's there speaking with me, who sponsored all the reform medical marijuana and recreational marijuana and hemp legislation in the last 5 years in Indiana. She's a Democratic senator from Northern Indiana Portage, and I'm asking every Libertarian, Democrat, and Republican to support her because she's our best chance of getting good legislation out this year. I marched with the Church of Cannabis, Bill Levin's group. I actually spoke at their first service in Indianapolis. And let me just take 1 second on that. When I wasn't going to go because they were talking about arresting everybody, and then they said they weren't going to. And I went with Bill Martin from my law office, who's the head of Indiana NORML. And he's a great guy to talk to about this, too. And the place was surrounded by 200 police officers and paddy wagons, and it was just ridiculous. I bet the city of Indianapolis spent $250,000 to make sure no one lit a joint during a church service. Now, no one did, but isn't that just a waste of and a misplaced priority to do that? And you know, it is your religious freedom to choose how you want to take care of your body and your spiritual connection. I just hope that someday Indiana will recognize this, and I hope people get involved. You should vote for every Libertarian candidate you can because they're all in favor of reform marijuana laws. And I hope the Democrats take up the same issue this year, and there's going to be some Republicans too. But just vote for people that want to change, which means you've got to be registered and you got to go out and vote this year more than ever. So that's what you can do. There's lots you can do. You can run for office like I did. You can write letters to the editor. You can be on radio shows. Just don't be afraid. It's the right thing to do.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.